We'll do it live!
Fuck it!
Good evening and welcome to the Cosmic Highway Patrol, coming at you from the outskirts of Brevard County, Florida, USA. I am your host, Matt Chouinard, and thank you for joining me. So a couple of things up top before I get started. I had to take a couple weeks off due to the unexpected passing of my father, Dan Chouinard. He was a big influence on the content and the aesthetic of this show. He requested a subject shortly before his passing that I'll be covering towards the end of January. Next, I'm going to be changing the episode release day from Sunday to Thursday, starting with the first episode in February. I think that's about it as far as announcements go. So tonight, I'm going to be going over a subject that I find absolutely fascinating. The weather. Though it's usually a subject reserved for when you have nothing else to really talk about, I find weather, weather patterns, and weather anomalies incredibly interesting. I'm on a motorcycle 200 plus days out of the year, so I keep a very close eye on what the skies are doing and when they're going to be doing it. I currently have three weather apps on my phone that I look at every morning before I leave the house. I look at the radar, current temperature, temperature change through the day, rain chances, as well as wind speed and direction. Having all this information is incredibly important if I don't want to get soaked or freeze my ass off. And though day-to-day weather patterns are a foregone conclusion to most, I'll sit out back looking at the radar watching minute-to-minute changes and progressions of thunderstorms rolling into the area on an almost daily basis here in the summertime. Which is to say, I'm a bit of what you could accurately call a weather nerd. So what is weather? The Merriam-Webster definition of weather is the state of the atmosphere with respect to heat or cold, wetness or dryness, calm or storm, clearness or cloudiness. A total snooze fest, I get it. But what happens when there's such a disturbance in the atmosphere that the weather, and therefore our surroundings, get a bit more chaotic than what we're normally used to on a day-to-day basis? We get hurricanes, tornadoes, blizzards, hail, and thunderstorms. Sometimes, depending on the location and time of the year, you get conditions like what happened in Browning, Montana on January 23, 1916. Following a daytime high of 44 degrees Fahrenheit, which is very mild in that region at that time of year, a powerful Arctic front came rolling through, dropping the temperature to an astonishing overnight low of negative 56 degrees Fahrenheit. A total of 100 degree temperature drop. If that's not bad enough, there was a wild temperature swing in the Black Hills of South Dakota on January 22, 1943. Okay, so at 7:30 a.m. in Spearfish, South Dakota, the temperature rose from negative 4 degrees Fahrenheit to 45 degrees Fahrenheit at 7:32. That's 49 degrees in 2 minutes. The temperature gradually rose to 54 degrees Fahrenheit by 9 a.m., where it suddenly dropped to negative 4 degrees Fahrenheit at 9:27. Towns in the surrounding area in the Black Hills all recorded similar swings. At one point, the town of Deadwood recorded negative 16 degrees Fahrenheit, while 2 miles away in the town of Lead, they recorded 52 degrees Fahrenheit. All right, so you still with me? Good. That would be absolutely wild to see in person. Here in Florida, two of the things we have an abundance of besides snowbirds and alligators is thunderstorms and hurricanes. So for those born and raised in Antarctica, the thunderstorm is a weather event characterized mainly by thunder and lightning, as well as other atmospheric disturbances, such as heavy rain, heavy winds, and sometimes, on occasion, hail. Thunderstorms are systems that develop within the cumulonimbus clouds. The formation of thunderstorms is as follows. The storm will start off with an instability, in this case warm, moist air near the ground surface, overlaid with cooler air above it. Before I go any further, I think it's worthy of note that most every weather event you've ever seen was caused by a disturbance or instability in the atmosphere. This instability is usually caused by a warm or cold front, jet stream movement, high or low pressure systems, or the thing that I find really fascinating, the Coriolis effect. We'll be getting into warm and cold fronts in a minute, and high and low pressure systems after that. I could dive headfirst into a rabbit hole here, but real quick, the Coriolis effect is basically the result of the Earth's rotation. Since the Earth has been proven time and time and time again to be round, spherical, rotating object, this rotation causes moving air masses to move to the right in the northern hemisphere and to the left in the southern hemisphere. Okay, so if I go into it any more than that, this is probably going to be more of a physics lesson than anything. I'm way off track. All right, thunderstorms. So we have warm, moist air on the ground and cooler air moving in above it. It's at that point that the warmer air rises due to being less dense than the cooler air above it. That is what's called convective lifting. Another way this can happen is what is called frontal lifting. This happens when a warm front and a cold front meet head-on, and the warm front ramps over the cold front like the Duke boys on their way to the boar's nest, creating another kind of temperature instability. As the air rises, it cools and condenses in the form of the ever-present anvil-shaped cumulonimbus clouds we see damn near every afternoon here in central Florida. Once these air masses start mixing and mingling, that's when the magic starts to happen. The updrafts within the clouds bring warm, moist air up, ultimately creating raindrops and ice crystals, and downdrafts bringing cool air down to the ground. This is why the temperature drops slightly before a rainstorm. It's at this point, as the cloud starts to grow, the separation of positive and negative charges start to occur. It's this charge separation that causes lightning, with the top of the cloud being positively charged and the bottom being negatively charged. This charge separation is caused by the movement of water and ice crystals inside the cloud. Have you, like me, ever wondered why the lightning bolt is a jagged, unorganized shape? It's due to the creation of what is called a stepped leader. What is that exactly? I'm glad you made it this far and asked. Within the cloud, as the positive and negative charge separation increases, there is a pathway of sorts that forms downward from the cloud. This formation is invisible, and it forms a series of steps. Once close to the ground, the leader induces a positive charge in whatever may be below it. Buildings, trees, maybe you if you're unlucky. Once completely formed, the path to discharge is complete. The lightning bolt that you see is a rapid discharge of electricity shooting back up into the sky through the leader. This is the jagged, awe-inspiring bolt of lightning, not coming from the heavens, rather traveling back in a form of heat and light from whence it came. The thunder you hear afterwards happens when the surrounding air rapidly expands, creating a shockwave that can be heard for miles around. I'm having fun. I love this shit. When I was a little kid, my house got hit by lightning, and I've been fascinated ever since. So for the three people that made it to this point, thank you for listening. And that is just an example of how complex these weather systems can be. Another thing Florida is known for, besides Daytona Bike Week and pill mills, is the abundance of hurricane activity. Here in Florida, hurricane season lasts from June 1st to November 1st. When a hurricane is headed towards us, it's usually a topic of conversation for at least a week or so before it actually hits. I've been through a few of them. Out in public, there's a buzz in the air that is kind of like a combination of nervous excitement and existential dread. Grocery stores get cleared out of non-perishable goods, and lines form at the gas stations until the tanks run dry. About 24 hours before, I-95 North is gridlocked. No movement for hours. Some unlucky souls even run out of gas while stuck in traffic trying to evacuate South Florida. 18 hours before landfall, the feeder bands start dropping.
Little bit of Sting Gang rain.
Network meteorologists roll up their sleeves, loosen their ties, and look as frazzled as they possibly can using phrases like hunker down, storm surge, and eyewall. As the storm makes landfall, the lights start flickering, the sustained winds, sometimes 80 to 100 miles an hour, start bending trees at a 45 degree angle. So, what is a hurricane? A hurricane, simply put, is a powerful tropical cyclone. A cyclone is a large-scale atmospheric system that is typically characterized by the rotation of air around a low-pressure center. So hurricanes generally form over warm ocean water, oftentimes 80 degrees Fahrenheit or above, when there is relatively weak wind shear and plenty of moisture in the air. The warm water provides the gasoline for the hurricane engine. Hurricanes have a well-defined low-pressure center called the eye, which is surrounded by bands of very strong winds and the storm's heaviest rainfall. Think of a hurricane kind of like water in the toilet bowl while it's being flushed. The low-pressure center draws and circulates surrounding water and other contents towards the center, and the center velocity being the fastest and most intense. Think of the water coming from the outer rim being the feeder bands, feeding and giving energy to the storm. Now just imagine that the toilet water is warm, humid air, and bam, you have a small-scale working model of a hurricane every time you snap a deuce. Hurricanes are categorized by the sustained wind speed based on the Saffir-Simpson Hurricane Wind Scale. These categories range from the weakest at Category 1 to the strongest at Category 5. Real quick, Cat 1 is 74 to 95 miles an hour, Cat 2 is 96 to 110 miles an hour, Cat 3 is 111 to 129 miles an hour, and Cat 4 is 130 to 156 miles an hour, while Cat 5 is 157 miles an hour and higher. Though they are the same kind of storm, hurricanes happen in the Atlantic and Central Pacific, and typhoons happen in the West and South Pacific. Just had to put that in there for this next part. Typhoon Haiyan, or Yolanda, was an incredibly powerful typhoon that hit the Philippines in November of 2013. The thing that made Super Typhoon Yolanda truly exceptional was the 195-mile-an-hour sustained winds, which was the highest cyclone sustained wind speed. That is, of course, until 2 years later when Hurricane Patricia hit southern Mexico with 215-mile-an-hour sustained winds. As far as total and widespread destruction is concerned, look no further than 2005's Hurricane Katrina. Though initially a Cat 1, Katrina quickly intensified into a Cat 5 in the Gulf of Mexico soon before making landfall along the Gulf Coast near Burris Triumph, Louisiana, just southeast of Nawlins. The storm surge caused levees to fail, which led to widespread flooding in the city that sits 7 feet below the sea level. Heavy rainfall and a rising river only exacerbated the already dire situation. In total, over 1,200 lives were lost, along with over 100 missing, along with $145 billion in damage, which put it at near the top of the list of both one of the deadliest and costliest storms on record. Hurricanes are a bitch.
Is there something that you would like to add to the conversation? Perhaps something that went unaddressed or was completely ignored altogether? Let us know at CosmicHighwayPatrol@gmail.com or Cosmic Highway Patrol on Instagram. And as always, all comments and insights are greatly appreciated. Now, back to the show.
But, admittedly, hurricane parties can be pretty fun. During 2004's Hurricane Francis, I was hunkered down with several of my coworkers about a mile from where I'm recording right now. We basically hung out in my friend's garage drinking beers waiting for the storm to come in. At the time, I'd only been living in Florida for about a year and didn't really know what to expect. As day turned into night, the wind and rain got worse. Looking out into the darkness, all I could hear was the howling winds. in the middle of the night, we all heard a sound that I can only describe as a freight train rolling along over the top of the house. Turns out that sound was a small tornado that went tearing down one of the side roads. Every other telephone pole was knocked over and the path was cut through the woods. At the time, I'd never seen anything quite like it. I've still never actually seen a tornado in person, but I have seen what they can do. A tornado is a rapidly rotating column of air that can at times extend from a thunderstorm to the ground. And though I've only seen these things in action on video, tornadoes have the potential to be ridiculously destructive. So here's how they work. Tornadoes can generally form at any time during specific atmospheric conditions. These conditions will include a warm, moist air mass colliding with a cold, dry air mass, creating that atmospheric instability mentioned earlier. This, along with strong wind shear or changes in the wind speed and direction depending on altitude, which helps with the creation of the rotation of the storm's updraft. This rotation can at times be several miles in diameter and can extend deep within the storm. This particular formation is called a mesocyclone. If these specific conditions continue and intensify, a smaller, more condensed vortex can form within the mesocyclone, which ultimately leads to the formation of a tornado. This tornado then extends from the mesocyclone and makes contact with the ground. Once that air mass gets moving, the momentum keeps it going. Tornadoes, sometimes known as rope tornadoes, at times may only be 30 to 50 feet wide. These are the ones you see quickly form, with the thin funnel dropping out of the clouds like the finger of God. Though destructive, these are generally short-lived events that dissipate soon after forming. The larger ones, though, can be a mile or more wide and will absolutely decimate everything in their path. These larger tornadoes generally tend to last a bit longer, furthering their potential for total destruction. One such tornado is known as the Tri-State Tornado, which holds the record for the longest continuous tornado track in recorded history. The Tri-State traveled about 219 miles across Missouri, Illinois, and Indiana on March 18, 1925. This particular tornado is estimated to have been an F5, with the estimated wind speed of in excess of 300 miles an hour. After touching down in Ellington, Missouri at 1:01 p.m., it spent the next 3.5 hours obliterating everything in its path, traveling between 62 and 73 miles an hour. In total, this one twister claimed 695 lives, injured over 2,000, and destroyed 15,000 homes. Damn. Though not as destructive per se, fire tornadoes are quite creepy looking, almost like something that you would see at the gates of hell. These are usually seen during wildfires, caused by powerful updrafts and convective currents that cause the whirling motion in the fire. I don't know. In doing the reading, it just seemed worthy of mention. Moving right along. I was born and raised in Nashua, New Hampshire. The weather from November to March is miserable. Cold wind, sleet, snow, freezing rain, snowstorms, ice storms, or a combination of all of them at the same time. Much the same way we here in the great state of Florida, USA, track hurricanes and tropical depressions, New England tracks blizzards and nor'easters. The moment I realized I didn't have the patience or the fortitude for these nonsensical weather events was one night after work. I was driving my 1979 Camaro home through a nor'easter trying to get onto the highway. Completely sideways, full throttle, glass packs cackling, doing 20 miles an hour with near zero visibility. I was pissed. I was mad as hell, and I didn't feel the need to go and take it anymore. I could tell you stories of the good times, like knowing the good parking lots to do donuts for hours in. But at that moment, I just wanted to be home. But I digress. What is a blizzard? Well, a blizzard is a severe snowstorm mainly characterized by strong winds, low temperatures, and lots of snow. In order to be classified as a blizzard, a storm must have 35 plus mile an hour winds, quarter mile visibility, and blowing snow. Here's how they happen. For starters, A big cold air mass is needed to bring frigid temperatures. Next, a mass of relatively warm, moist air creates something of a disturbance. Once the warm air mass rises above the cold air mass, clouds and precipitation are created. As the lifted air cools, all the moisture in the air condenses and cools, and condensation freezes and falls to the ground as snow. Simple enough. The nor'easter is a semi-arctic version of a tropical storm. Nor'easters typically move up the east coast from the southeast to the northeast. The storms almost always have a counterclockwise rotation, which can bring some pretty nasty winds along the coastal areas. Nor'easters get their name from the strong, sustained winds from the northeast. Much like a tropical depression, the storm is generally defined by a low-pressure center, which increases central wind speed, and instead of just rain like we're used to down here, the wind is combined with heavy snowfall that can just make an absolute mess out of everything. As a New Englander, the one I always heard about was the infamous Blizzard of 78. From February 5th to February 7th, 1978, a pretty nasty blizzard hit the better part of New England. This storm brought heavy and sustained snowfall. In some places, well over 2 feet of snow was reported. The blizzard also had strong winds, even gusting to hurricane force like in some areas, creating near zero visibility and sizable snowdrifts. Coastal areas saw significant flooding and storm surge, made worse by the storm coinciding with the high tide. A combination of heavy snowfall and high wind caused widespread power outages, down power lines. This storm messed up everything, from public transportation to everyday life. Now, I know the lake effect snow in upstate New York is unlike anywhere, but I decided to do the Blizzard of 78. And why? Because I fucking felt like it. The Blizzard of 78 got mentioned at least once a year, every year when I was growing up. Like I said at the beginning, I have 3 weather apps that I am always checking. The radar, temperatures, forecasts. So with all this technology, I got to wondering, how did they predict storms and weather changes in ancient times? Up until the 1600s, the methods were somewhat rudimentary, like observing and noting cloud formations and shapes. The movement of celestial bodies, such as the appearance of certain stars and the behavior of the moon, was also thought to have connections with weather patterns. Some cultures observed the behavior of animals, such as birds, insects, and domestic animals, and believed these changes were a signal of changing weather. The first mercury barometer was invented by Evangelista Torricelli in 1643. This invention provided valuable information about the changes in air pressure associated with the weather patterns. The first practical thermometer was invented by Daniel Gabriel Fahrenheit, a German physicist, in 1714. Fahrenheit's mercury in glass thermometer was the first temperature measuring device that could provide accurate and reproducible results. Over time, refinements were made leading to the development of the centigrade scale by Anders Celsius in 1742 and the Kelvin scale by Lord Kelvin William Thompson in the mid-1800s. About this time, the telegraph was invented, which made transmitting temperatures and weather pattern observations a long distance possible. The first National Weather Service was established here in the States in 1870. The service used telegraph reports to compile the first weather maps and forecasts. Weather maps were created about this time, which depicted atmospheric pressure patterns. Norwegian meteorologist Wilhelm Bjerknes and his colleagues later developed the concept of air mass and fronts, which significantly advanced weather observation and analysis. The first weather balloon was launched 50 years later, in February of 1920, by French meteorologist Léon Tissot de Bord. This launch was a significant milestone in the history of meteorology and the study of the Earth's atmosphere. This balloon carried equipment that measured temperature, humidity, and air pressure as it rose up into the atmosphere. Radar technology became critical for monitoring precipitation and storm movements, especially during World War II. The launch of the first weather satellite happened in 1960, providing a perspective of weather patterns on a global scale, as well as improving the ability to track and forecast storms. As computers became more powerful throughout the 50s and 60s, meteorologists began running complex numerical models to simulate atmospheric behavior. This allowed meteorologists to more accurately predict medium and long-term weather patterns. Today, advances in observational technology like Doppler radar, GPS, and supercomputing have greatly enhanced the accuracy of weather forecasting. High-resolution models and forecasting techniques are now commonly used to provide more detailed and probabilistic predictions, which in turn give us access to more weather-related information at any moment than most could possibly need. What a time to be alive! So that is extreme weather phenomena. What do you think? You ever see a tornado? How about a hurricane? Let me know at CosmicHighwayPatrol@gmail.com or CosmicHighwayPatrol on Instagram. This has been incredibly interesting to research. If you made it to this point, write "I made it" on the comment section of this episode's post on Instagram, and you will receive a Cosmic Highway Patrol Gold Star. I hope you found it as fascinating as I did. I'd like to thank everyone for listening. That about does it for me. So, good night and take care.